self-centered, mind-opening conversations. But in this hour, we're looking at how the enemy that we've been dealing with is patriarchy in the workplace. We looked at some statistics before we got into the news. 40% of South African women feel burnt out. 51% feel stress levels are much higher than a year ago. To the fact that 94% of respondents believe that requesting flexible working arrangements will affect their chances of promotion. And this is in the sign of the great resignation that is set to actually continue, as more than half of women have been surveyed to plan to leave their employer within the next 2 years. Some quite frightening statistics, right? But we have almost 60% of women who work in hybrid environments, but they feel that they've been excluded from important meetings, important conversations, and women who work as gender equality leaders, which is 5% of the sample, report far high levels of engagement, trust, and career satisfaction. These are not just statistics, but you know what? This is something that people, that women face every single day. It's not just numbers that we come up with. Let's get a group of 10 women and ask them questions. This is people's reality that we're highlighting. And we're going to be having a conversation with Ms. Linda Zamuni, a well-regarded financial services and executive and non-executive director, who was appointed the CEO of the GBVF Response Fund. And she was previously MD, right, of Retail at Alexander Forbes and group executive for retail operations in South Africa at Liberty Holdings. With 20 years of financial services experience, I mean, spanning from short-term insurance, health insurance, life insurance, she's really worked in financial services, legal advisory services, of compliance, risk management, and has served as several boards of trustees and corporate government. I mean, she regularly actually indulges in her wanderlust tendencies whenever she has a chance to be herself, has a passion for mentoring and coaching young women. And I think it's important that we have a conversation with someone like this here on the show. And I think it's time for me to officially welcome Lindy. Lindy to the show. Hello, Lindy. How are you?
Hi, I'm very well, thanks. And how are you?
I'm well, thank you. I mean, I am actually honored to be having a conversation with you. I mean, just from your bio, and please, I need to let people know listening. I have actually met quite a lot, you know. BA, LLB degrees, you know, LLM as well, certified financial planner. It goes on and on and on. But I want to say thank you so much for availing yourself to come and speak to us here on the show.
Thank you. That's gracious of you. And hello to your listeners.
So I think really the first question, let's just dive right into it. Explain to us what GBVF is. What is their role in sort of playing and fighting rather the gender-based violence that we experience, especially in a country like South Africa?
Yeah, so the GBVF Response Fund is a fund that was launched by the President on the 4th of February last year. You'll recall that in 2018 there's a presidential summit in terms of which civil society organizations really rallied and raised the call to say enough is enough. They marched on the JSE and they agitated until the government, the President held the summit. And one of the things that came out of the summit was an agreement to draft a national strategic plan on gender-based violence and femicide, acknowledging the multiplicity of causes, the complexity of the environment, but also saying that it's going to take all of us to deal with gender-based violence and femicide, and we're going to have to operate in a multi-sectoral way across government, across public sector, private sector, and civil society organizations. And in order to do this work, then resources are required. And we were launched, the fund was launched and set up last year to raise resources and fund community-based organizations that have been working on the ground, doing a lot of work to fight the scourge of gender-based violence, implementing programs, interventions, providing shelter, providing social services, psychological services, etc., and really tackling these toxic masculinity stereotypes that are part of what fuels gender-based violence and femicide in the country. It is also the fact that although gender-based violence and femicide is a global issue, we have the most pervasive and highest levels of gender-based violence. We have 5 times the global level of femicide than the rest of the world. And so we have to knuckle down. This is the land of our forebears, and we have committed to living democratically. But we can't live democratically for as long as girls, women, the LGBTQIA plus community, disabled persons, elderly people are not free, and public spaces are not free. We cannot proclaim that freedom.
Yes. Yeah, that's really powerful to say. And I'm really excited that that's being put in place and the journey that you've spoken about it on. But I want to maybe now direct it to you specifically, right? You know, we looked at a statistic that says that almost 60% of women who work in hybrid environments feel that they've been excluded for important meetings, or they fear even speaking out to talk about maybe their worries and concerns at workplace, feeling as though that they will sort of reduce their chances of a promotion and so on. Mm. So much so that in as much as, yes, a woman can be successful in a space, she still feels that she can't really own that space that she's in. So what motivates you? And I mean, I'm looking at you and, you know, being a CEO of this fund that you just spoken about, and still advocating for the fact that we need to address the inequality in workplaces. What motivates you to keep doing that?
You know, one of the reasons I'm a believer in early childhood learning programs and development programs, that is where we are wired from a socialization perspective. And I can say for myself, at those ages and phases, I was a young girl growing up with a father who affirmed me and made me believe anything is possible, made me believe if I put my mind to it, I can do it, and gave me the skills and the tenacity to overcome, because you're right, there are so many things that stand in the way of gender equality, and the experience of a lot of females on the job in terms of denial of opportunities, in terms of corporate environments that don't take account of the fact that in a woman's life, things like unpaid care work for children at home tends to fall disproportionately onto women. And these things, they have an impact on our careers. So I've been very, very fortunate in that I grew up with that sense of identity, that sense of strength, that sense of affirmation, and that in my adult life and in my career I had the wonderful support of a caregiver who was with us for 20 years until she retired last year. That support is important, but not all women have access to it. And so at a policy level, there needs to be something done to support women in advancing their careers. Not just the employment equity experience, but from a budgeting perspective, how do we ensure that unpaid care work is actually recognized, actually valued, and that women actually have a benefit for it? So these are all the questions under the auspices of what it means for us to budget with women in mind. How do you approach a feminist budget at government level as well as at provincial level is a big question.
Now, those are questions I think people even forget to ask, you know, we don't even think about them. You know, you really have opened my mind to it. You know, at a working when you get to work, or when you finally, let's say you graduated, get into workspace, it's sort of like you left open-ended. You don't know where to navigate yourself. So let's take it one step back. At school and university level, how do we include programs or teach the importance of equality between male and female, having an equal level play for people, so that as soon as they get into the workplace, they're actually more conscious of what's going on?
Yeah. I think, you know, one of the things that I would say in schools, it is important that we help children to understand why violence is wrong, when to speak up, what to do when you are uncomfortable, and to make sure that those avenues of support and assistance are available. But we need to demystify this violence that we live in. We need to ensure that children have resources available at schools where they can talk to somebody in the event that they are living in a domestic violence situation. But I would also say at a program level, it is important for schools to be talking about this pernicious, pervasive, and wicked topic.
Yes.
In universities, you guys, I think, should be running programs in terms of which you are dealing with the scourge. There's not enough that even students say, I know students agitate a lot around this. I know that they speak a lot about it. I know they demonstrate around it. But we need now actionable outcomes around how to create safe spaces on campuses. What do I mean by that? How do we deal with perpetrators in a manner that doesn't cause secondary victimization to somebody who is raped on campus? How do we deal with the issue of alcohol and the fact that alcohol does fuel some of these attacks? How do we foster responsible drinking, but also safety of women, focusing on how those who perpetrate violence should be behaving, rather than saying to a woman, don't get drunk, don't wear short skirts. The conversation should not be focused on women. The conversation should be focused on those people who do the perpetration, and predominantly that is males. I think we need a more advanced understanding of gender. We operate in a highly heteronormative world. That's the world through which we define ourselves.
Yeah.
And we don't leave room for understanding people who fall outside of the binary concept of male and female.
That's true. Yes.
So I think those things are important. How do you ensure that you are not harassed? That's important. Coming into the workplace, you need to know how to stand for yourself. You must understand what legal protections are available to you. You must ensure that there are policies on your campuses that make it clear what you can do if you are harassed. And by harassment, I include cyberbullying, by the way.
Yes. Sure. And I mean, the thing is, once it's coming up, even while I'm listening, I'm listening to myself, you know, those things are coming up in my mind and saying that, you know what, I didn't think of that. You know, I didn't think of it in that way. You know? And I think that's what we need to realize, that it is complex in one way, but at the same time, it's just ensuring that your safety is of utmost importance.
And, absolutely.
And I mean, it's also important that this the GDF has come about. Are you getting help from other organizations to also address this situation? Are you partnering up with people? Or is it just GDF is a big umbrella that covers most issues?
So we work with a host of other organizations. By definition, I mean, the National Strategic Plan on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide is really the guiding document for just about anyone who's working in the sector, whether you're a community-based organization or a donor or a funder. We work with a host of organizations on the ground. Those are the ones that we have funded. But we do have multi-sectoral, that's what it's called, to work across all these different spheres. So in those multi-sectoral meetings, we work with government representatives from the Department of Women, from the Department of Social Development. We have programs with the SAPS. We're working with society organizations and nonprofits that operate in the space, researchers and academics. Okay. And all of that is through the National Strategic Plan Collaborative.
Okay, that's
so that
really
brings together everybody that's working in this ecosystem. Yeah.
No, it definitely sounds like a very huge partnership. And, you know, talking to that woman listening, right, whether it's been in college or whether it's been in the workplace or looking for a job and sort of maybe working part-time wherever they are, what message would you send? I mean, maybe from your experience or just from your heart, what message would you send for them in a field, especially those working in a field that's male-dominated? What message would you send to them that is obviously one that is encouraging and sort of giving them that pat on the back?
I think, firstly, when you are in a role, you must believe that you are the best person to be doing that role at that particular time. You have a right to equal opportunities as you rise. You have a right to be acknowledged. You have a right to work in a safe space. And that's true of harassment, whether it's sexual harassment or the denial of opportunities. You have a right to self-actualize. And you owe it to yourself to focus. Your time is now. You are the one that you've been waiting for. And I would say we all have to invest in self-belief as part of our self-care mantra. If you see something wrong, speak out and hold those people in positions of authority accountable. This is the big problem that we have, the underreporting because people are scared and so forth. Fear is the enemy of progress. And it is
simple
time
as that.
That we stop walking and living fearful lives. And we hold those that are accountable for doing what they should be doing to advance our development in our quest for gender equality, to advance our careers, to support career growth, and to create the opportunities that we know so many vibrant and capable South Africans are looking for.
Yes, Lindy. Honestly, it really is encouraging. I'm encouraged by your words as well. And I mean, especially to wrap up this conversation, I think the big question here is, in your position, where you, in your experience, and also us coming to the point where we realize, okay, yes, we are at an all-time high when it comes to GBV cases. I mean, and the fact that even the cases that are reported are probably not even half of what's really happening in the country. But are we in a position to actually believe that we can achieve sort of equality and get rid of a stereotypical behavior, or is it still what I like to call a light at the end of the tunnel, that we still have a long way to go? But is there an achievement? Can we actually get it?
Yes, so I do believe that we can. And I mean, South Africa, along with Rwanda, I'm forgetting one other country, have made significant progress on the continent in terms of gender equality as measured through representation of women on boards as well as senior management and government. So certainly at a policy level you see it. I think that because it is a big problem and a global problem, it's one that we are all going to have to put our shoulder on the wheel and really continue the drive. I think that there have been a lot of progressive steps. If we believe that we want to see gender equality in our time, I believe the World Economic Forum, when it says the four things that are critical, firstly is pay parity. We know that women tend to get paid less than men. So pay parity is important. The Department of Labor has an obligation to oversee this. That pay gap must be narrowed. We all know that we must prevent violence, and this is why the Gender-Based Response Fund exists, as well as other organizations working in the space. We know that girls and women must be equipped with business opportunities in the STEM environment. This is critical for the future. So if we are to be part of the future, we have to be included in the scientific and mathematics and engineering and technical disciplines. And then digital and financial inclusion of women, banking systems, as well as opportunities in digital economies, that is critical to have gender equality. It's a global sustainable goal as well. So we fight this fight knowing that we are part of a global collective that is working its way to gender equality. So in a nutshell, I do believe there's light at the end of the tunnel. I do believe significant strides have been made. But as always, there's more that can be done, and everybody needs to come to the party.
Sure, Lindy. It's been a fantastic conversation I've had with you. I feel like this was more like one-on-one, and I'm here like feeling so empowered. I think the last few words, I'll just really reiterate what you just really said, is that fear is the enemy of progress, and we need to make progress. And the last thing that you just said, if we are part of the future, then we need to keep working and fighting the fight. I think that's where we can really wrap up this conversation. Thank you
absolutely.
So much. Thank you very, very much. And I really hope we can have you back here, maybe chat to us more and open up and have those conversations. Time is really our enemy at this point. I would love to have an hour, rather hours and hours of conversation. We can tackle this topic. But thank you. I hope you have a fantastic afternoon, and we'll definitely be hearing from you soon.
Thank you for having me, and thanks to the listeners.
So that was Miss Lindy Dlamini. Listen, a woman of stature is what